Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Wake up, well I know I'm gonna be the man who wakes up next to you. When I go out, yeah I know I'm gonna be the man who goes along with you. If I get drunk.
Oklahoma moves to 1-0 on the season with a epic 73-0 win over Arkansas State. What's up, everybody? This is the Sooner Nation podcast. Matt Hofeld here with you. I hope you had a great, great Labor Day weekend. I'll tell you who did not enjoy their Labor Day weekend. That was Butch Jones. We'll start here. We'll start with Butch Jones. Obviously upset, emotional on the sideline after watching his team get absolutely shellacked by the Sooners. And here's the thing. I feel like I'm a compassionate guy. In my real job in the real world, I deal with compassionate situations all the time. No love lost whatsoever for Butch Jones after his team got absolutely thrashed by the Sooners on Saturday. Now, I will say this to his credit. Post game, Butch Jones said all the right things. He went all the right places. I mean, talked about the speed, talked about the turnaround, talked about the transition. And with the, you know, we talked about pre-game, we talked about the transition on this football roster. 53% of the roster is brand new from 2022 to 2023. 53%. More than half of your guys are brand new. And it makes a difference. And one of the things we wondered was how much would the new blood make a difference? And it was epic. And here's what you really got to look at. The team speed, way better than what they were last year. Butch Jones even said it himself, the transition in speed from what they saw on film in 2022 to what happened on the field in 2023, night and day difference, and that makes a difference. But you know what else was different? Was the aggressiveness of this team, the chippiness even on both sides of the ball, but particularly on the defense, where you got new guys like Gentry Williams, who was just getting started in his career, first ever start for the Crimson and Cream. Then you got guys like Reggie Pearson, Desan McCullough. You got this Jaron Kanek in the middle, new guy starting. And basically what you're seeing is the man, I hate to say it in these terms, but really it's what it is. You're seeing the purge of Lincoln Riley's guys and Lincoln Riley's mindset and the adaptation of Brent Venables guys, Jeff Lebby guys, Ted Roof guys, and that mindset that they want. And here's the thing. You know, players and teams, they take on the personality of their coach. They do. And we know what is a proven fact about Lincoln Riley is that he is a soft dude. He's soft. Whether we're talking about moving out of the University of Oklahoma to go to the Pac-12 so he doesn't have to join the SEC, or whether we're talking about strength and conditioning and finesse play calling, finesse offense that sometimes is a really, really electrifying, but sometimes gets overwhelmed by physical defenses. We saw that in the Big 12 with Baylor. We saw that in the you saw it in the Pac-12 last year with the Utah twice. The Utah game, both of those just got too physical for Lincoln Riley. He's a soft guy, soft mindset. The team takes on that personality. Now we're seeing that purged out, and we're starting to see this team take on the personality of their new coach. Now, will that be enough to get them through a perfect season and into the college football playoff? Probably not in year number two. But is it enough for me as a guy who's watched this team for many, many years, who has been a semi-journalist for many, many years, and then just a guy who has a fan blog or a website or a podcast or whatever? I've never seen OU come out of the gate like this. And if you say you have, you're a liar. We have never seen an OU team shoot out of the gate like they did on Saturday to the tune of 73-0. And when we talk about teams taking on the personality of their coach, let's not forget the history with Butch Jones. You had a little bit of chippiness when he was the head coach of Cincinnati. You got Bob Stoops going out there. They get the road win in Cincinnati. Do you remember Jay Norvell getting into some things with the players from the Bearcats, some defensive guys kind of jawing on the sidelines with them, and then, you know, the players kind of playing the victim card because the coach was talking down to them. And then Butch Jones is at Tennessee, and the whole Eric Stryker, you know, I think Zach Sanchez was involved in that, with basically Butch Jones accosting Eric Stryker after the game, telling him to be a better person than what he is. You know, you're a heck of a player, but you need to be a better person, or whatever, running your mouth, or be humble, or whatever he said. Again, victim mentality. So when you see him emotional on the sideline and has to drop to a knee, and then a player comes and puts his arm around him and helps him get up and walks off, I don't feel sorry for him. I don't. There is zero love lost. I wanted 80 points. 73 wasn't satisfactory enough for me, but 73 will have to do. Oklahoma just completely demoralized Arkansas State. The Red Wolves were outmatched every position. Even when Oklahoma, what you saw was the difference in depth. You know, what you saw from Jackson Arnold was something this team just didn't have at all last year in a backup quarterback. What you saw from some of the backup receivers, backup running backs, backup defensive guys, you just saw, we've been using this phrase, competitive depth, competitive depth, competitive depth. We've been using that so much. You actually saw it. You saw it. So I want to start with a true or false statement we picked up from Nick on Twitter. And Nick actually sent this near the end of August as we're getting ready to start the podcast back up. By the way, you can participate in the Sooner Nation podcast with your true or false statements by hitting us up on Twitter at Sports Heartland on Twitter, and then email the old-fashioned way, Heartland_sports@yahoo.com. But Nick says this, back at the last week of August, Nick said, true or false, Oklahoma will win 10 games this season. Then before the season started, I wanted to say true. I think the official over-under on wins for Oklahoma was 9.5, which makes sense because everybody's saying that this is a team that could, should, potentially will win 10 games. If the schedule sets up good for them and so forth. But when you see what that product looked like on the field, and again, I know there's the danger to buy into it too much because it was Arkansas State. But the reality is, this has never been done. The biggest margin of victory ever, I think in 106 years of Oklahoma football, that's the largest margin of victory that we've seen in a season opener at home. So I think there's something different about this team that is completely noticeable that would make you almost a fool to take the under at 9.5 at this point. Now, we got to kind of stake our bet before the season starts, and that's what we're doing here. But the reality is, I think I would have been over picking the over before this game even started. Now that we've seen the product on the field, there's no way you can't. You got to say 10 wins. If you get to 9 wins, it's a decent season. If you get to 10 wins, it's a good season. If you're below that threshold, it's probably a disappointing season. I think you just have to go that way. I think the big thing for Brent Venables is to finish above 500. And, you tell me. I know there are some complaints about the defense because of pressure. I started to say, you tell me what you saw in this game on Saturday that makes you think they can't have a winning season. The real answer is nothing. There's nothing that happened on Saturday that would make you think this team's not going to have a winning season. But the complicated, over-the-top fan answer is going to be, well, they didn't really get a lot of pressure on the quarterback. They didn't get disruptive in the backfield. And here's the reality. I mean, if you want the reality of that situation, is this. Now, if you want to have a reason to complain, just don't even listen to what I'm going to say over the next 20, 25 seconds. But if you want the real reason why that was, it's twofold. The first is very little stunting hardly no blitzing. I'd have to go back and look. I don't even know that they blitzed one time in that game. And then Arkansas State's in max protect most of the time. And so you've got more guys back blocking than what Oklahoma's bringing. And here's the thing. Well, why would they do that? Why would they do that? Okay, first of all, you're not a coach. I'm not a coach. They are. They know what they need to see in game one. And in my humble opinion, the guy who sits on the sideline and watches now, they wanted to see how well these defensive backs could cover. They wanted to see what these guys could do if they got their coverage schemes down right. Where are they in position? Can they turn their hips? Can they rotate? Can they get the call? Can they get the signal? They wanted these defensive backs to get a workout, linebackers out of the flat to get a workout before you play SMU, who's going to throw the ball all over the place on Saturday. That's why there was very little stunting, no blitzing, even though it was max protect all afternoon for Arkansas State. All right, I'm going to go over. I made some predictions before the game. I'm going to tell you about those predictions and how wrong I was. And then I got some observations from what we learned about this team. And then we turn the page to SMU after this. Thanks so much for tuning in to the Sooner Nation podcast.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
So before the game last week, I made five predictions. Five predictions, things we would see for the Arkansas State game. And you know what? It didn't go too well. So here's what I had. I had Oklahoma's defense will produce three turnovers. Nope. They had one. And again, I think it goes back to what I said in this opening segment about max protect and a lack of stunting and blitzing. I really thought the ball would be put up for grabs more frequently than what it was. But the reality is, again, these coaches know what they need to see. They know what they're looking for. They know what they're trying to get from their defensive guys. And, you know, we didn't get the turnover opportunities like we thought we would. So there's 0 for 1. You ready for 0 for 2? I said that Oklahoma's offense would produce two 100-yard rushers. Again, wrong and not even close. Javonte Barnes had the most rushing yards of anybody on the team with 49 yards on 13 carries. Now, as a team, they did run for 220 yards. What I didn't expect was for them to just keep rotating guys the way they did. Here's what I thought would happen. I thought Marcus Major would be the first guy in. It wasn't. It was Tabby Walker. I thought Javonte Barnes would come in and kind of take over. Gavin Salchuk wasn't for sure whether he was in or whether he was out. Apparently, he was going to play this coming week against SMU. But I really thought they would kind of hit the stride with the two backs. I thought Dylan Gabriel would run more than he did. I'm glad he didn't. Dylan Gabriel, only two rushing attempts, 15 yards, and then he had the touchdown. But I was off on that. Javonte Barnes, 13 carries, 49 yards. Tabby Walker had 8 carries, 44 yards. He actually finished third, even though he was the starter. Marcus Major, 9 carries, 31 yards. And then Dylan Smothers, the freshman, 7 carries, 16 yards. I want to come back to Tabby Walker real fast while we're on this and just say this. 5.5 yards per carry. Now, it was over 8 carries, okay? So it's not like he carried twice for 11 yards. He had like a 10-yard run and a 1-yard run. 8 times, 44 yards, 2 touchdowns, 5.5 yards per carry. I still say soon this running back room will give way to Javonte Barnes and Gavin Salchuk. Soon that's going to happen, but you got to give Tabby Walker kudos and credit for coming in there. Even though he was third on the team in rushing attempts, he still, of the running backs, he was the highest in yards per carry average at 5.5. So again, give him that credit where credit was due. Now, I did say Arkansas State would have less than 50 rushing yards, and this is the one I got right. I hit this one on the head. You barely got it, but I did get it. 48 yards on 23 rushing attempts for the Red Wolves, 2.1 yards per attempt. And this is just me looking at what I thought this defensive line was going to bring compared to what the struggles were with Arkansas State running the ball. They only averaged 88 rushing yards per game last season. So it wasn't a whole lot to go out on a limb and say less than 50 yards, but I did get that one right. That makes me 1 for 2. And the reality is that's the only one that I got right. I was close on another one. We'll get to that. But I said that Dylan Gabriel will account for 4 touchdowns. You know, and I know that it could have been 8 touchdowns, but Gabriel only played the first half. In my brain, I see him going into the third quarter, getting 1 or 2 possessions into the third quarter. I didn't see the massive onslaught coming the way it did. And so Dylan Gabriel's with 3 touchdowns, but not 4. So I was wrong, but I was close to being right. Gabriel, you know these stats by now because it's going to be Tuesday at the earliest when you listen to this. 308 passing yards, 2 touchdowns, and then I just talked about the 15 rushing yards and the other touchdown. He could have had 4 easily. He could have had 5 or 6 easily if he gets time in the third quarter. But again, Brent Venables didn't consult me on that. My last prediction going into the game, I missed it again, but I said Angelo Anthony would lead Oklahoma in receiving yards. Now, I am going to admit that I was wrong on this, okay? I was wrong. Nick Anderson led the team in yards, 2 catches, 68 yards, averaged 34 yards a catch. And we always said Nick Anderson had the type of potential to be a big play guy. Well, he showed it. Andrew Anthony, 3 catches, 66 yards. He was 2nd on the team. Here's the thing. When they started pulling the starters out and when Andrew Anthony got yanked, he was leading the team. Nick Anderson just kind of comes in there and does what hopefully we see him do for a long time. But catching a 52-yard pass kind of sets you up pretty well to lead the team, even though Andrew Anthony had the 45-yard reception on the opening possession. And here's the other thing. You got to look at Andrew Anthony. Again, I'm wrong. I mean, he had 3 catches, 66 yards, 2nd on the team in receiving yards. But what he brought in terms of speed and the penalties that he moved the ball just by drawing flags because Arkansas State could not run with him, that's a big deal. That's a really, really big deal, particularly if Brennan Thompson gets healthy and is able to get back into this mix. You got another speed guy that you're going to add to this offense when Brennan Thompson is ready to jump in there. But what you saw from Angelo Anthony, what I saw from Angelo Anthony, what the world saw from Angelo Anthony is going to cause some headaches because you're going to have, I mean, you can't, you're a fool as a defensive coordinator at this point if you don't play over the top. If you don't rotate over the top of him with downfield help, you're killing yourself because of what he brings. That leaves guys like, you know, Jaden Gibson coming in. I don't know how long Drake Stoops is going to be out. They said he could have come back in. You know, it's a sprained shoulder, but do you bring him back against SMU? Do you sit him out? So that guys like Jaden Gibson, guys like Jacquez Petaway are going to maybe have more run. By the way, Petaway, 9 catches on the day last Saturday. But even a guy like Gavin Freeman is probably going to get more run based on what happens with Drake Stoops. So, you know, look, Nick Anderson is getting that the nod for the 68 yards receiving leading the team. But dang, Angelo Anthony is going to bring a lot to this team and he's going to do a lot of good for this team and a lot of bad for opposing defenses because you got to figure out a way. And if you're playing over the top of him and running him deep, that's going to open up more things underneath. Keep in mind, we didn't see Austin Stogner involved in this offense outside of a blocker. Blake Smith was the tight end who caught the pass on Saturday. But I think you're going to see things open up more probably what you're going to see is Andrew Anthony run deep. You got a guy covering over the top of him. And then you're going to see the tight end come across mid-range to shallow because that safety is going back. It's just going to open so much more open for Dillon Gabriel, Jackson Arnold, these guys that are going to be slinging the ball. This offense, in my opinion, I know you lost Marvin Mims. I know you lost Eric Gray. I know you lost guys from the line to the NFL. But this offense looked good. It was humming. It looked efficient. It looked precise. It looked fast. We're going to jump into that because I've got some thoughts and observations from the game. I want to tell you, here's what we learned about this team on Saturday moving forward before the SMU game.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So let's talk about some things we learned about this team. We already talked about the Andrew Anthony effect. Tammy Walker getting that start at running back. I know we've talked about him as well. That was a surprise to me. I don't know how you felt about it, but to me, I was shocked that it was Tammy Walker, not Marcus Major, because the narrative that we created as fans, that the media created was, hey, we're rewarding Marcus Major for all of his work, for doing everything right, getting back with his team, getting healthy, getting eligible, everything that he's gone through to be here now in this moment. We are rewarding him because Javonte Barnes, Gavin Sawchuk have been banged up and have been limited participants in fall camp. And then, oh yeah, by the way, Tammy Walker's been working really hard as well and looks good. So I thought, and I know I'm not alone on this. In fact, I would probably call you a liar if you were to say to me right now in this moment, yeah, Matt, I knew it'd be Tammy Walker. I would probably call you a liar. Probably. Not saying I would, but I probably would. Because everyone thought it was going to be Marcus Major. And it was Tammy Walker. And I've already talked about the stats. I've already talked about how hard he worked. And 5.5 yards a carry, 2 touchdowns. Good for him. I'm curious to see now what happens with SMU. Because Gavin Sawchuk's working his way back. Javonte Barnes was working his way back. He ended up being the guy who got most of the carries. Now, I'm recording this Monday night. The depth chart should be coming out around Tuesday. Do we see Javonte Barnes shoot back up to that on that depth chart? Or is he still down below Tammy Walker and Marcus Major? And I think... is going to happen is you're going to see Javonte Barnes get more reps, and if Sawchuk's able to go, he's probably going to get the load around what we saw Javonte Barnes get against Arkansas State. That means someone's getting less carries. Now, we know Dillon Smothers, that's a garbage time thing. He did look good, but that's if we're winning by a billion, you get in the game type situation at this point, not because of talent, but because of depth ahead of him. So who takes a step back this week if Gavin Sawchuk comes into the mix? That's something that we're going to look at. But what we saw, what we observed, what we learned about this team, they're deep at running back, and it looks like it's quality depth. It really does. And so the second observation, second thing we learned about this team on Saturday was something we've already talked about, but Andrew Anthony. I mean, that 45-yard pass on the opening drive sets up the Drake Stoops touchdown. It just lets you know man, this guy's here and you're going to have to deal with him. And what Arkansas State started doing was, we're just going to yank his shoulder pad. We're going to pull him to the ground. We're going to take 15 yards as opposed to giving up 40 yards. Not every team is going to do that. Everyone's going to have to scheme to him. But what he brings to the table is the real deal. And he was a question mark. So why are you talking about him so much? I'm talking about him so much because he was a question mark. He was limited. He was used limitedly at Michigan. He was the co-offensive player of the year two seasons ago. Seldom used last year. Then he comes to Oklahoma, and all you hear about is his speed and his speed and his speed. Well, guess what? His speed was real, and his hands looked pretty good as also. Sometimes you have guys who are super, super fast, but they can't catch. That doesn't appear to be the case with Anthony. He looks super, super fast, and he can catch. And the other thing that you get out of this guy is he's over 6 feet tall. So we spent a lot of time, or at least I did, comparing Brennan Thompson to Hollywood Brown. It could be that we're looking at Andrew Anthony being a bigger version, 6'1", 192, a bigger version of Hollywood Brown, meaning he's going to be a more physical player, a guy that can not just beat you downfield, but also can beat you with the block, can you know, a safety or a defensive back might get out physical by him. This is a guy that I think is setting himself up in this Jeff Lebby offense to have a really, really dang good season. And we're basing off of 3 catches, but we're basing off of more than that. We're basing it off what we saw in the downfield passing game. And I don't know that I can, you know, they talk about beating a dead horse. So I don't want to keep doing that, but wow. Here's the other thing we learned about this team on Saturday in the 73-0 victory over Arkansas State. Is that the return game is back. You know, if you were Oklahoma football got to the point that if you were watching the game on television, you pretty much know a commercial break is following a punt. So the other team punts to Oklahoma, then it's going to go to commercial break. And you can get a head start on whatever you're going to do on the commercial break. Go refill your beverages, grab your snack, go to the bathroom, check your email, whatever you're going to do. You could do that basically at the time the punter kicked the ball because you knew down the field, there was going to be a fair catch. I think fair catch days are over in Norman, and what Gavin Freeman did, absolutely electrifying. And it wasn't just the flash of speed. It was the way he moved his hips, the way he jukes guys. Yes, Arkansas State, but that's a punt return that I think would score against a lot of people because Gavin Freeman gets all the credit, and the dude was spectacular. But the way they set up the blocking, the way the guys, Gavin Freeman's not running in the end zone by himself. And whenever you got a guy that's waltzing into the end zone with you, if you go back and look at it, if you don't remember, they're going to the end zone basically with their arms are all across each other's shoulders. It lets you know he had a convoy of blockers that just set it up perfectly for him as well. So yeah, he made some moves. He made some guys miss, but he had other guys on that punt return team running with them. Team effort at the end of the day. Gavin Freeman, that was the play of the week, in my opinion, for Oklahoma football. But it was a team effort, and it lets you know you got to take this return game seriously. And it's not just setting up for when you talk about guys like Andrew Anthony and bringing speed back to this offense, when you talk about adding Brennan Thompson and the speed of this offense, when you talk about the depth and what Jackson Arnold brought as a second-string quarterback, when you talk about the punt return game and the physicality of the defense, that's not just sending a message for teams in 2023. You're getting ready to transition from the Big 12 to the SEC in 2024. And when you see what Brent Venables has added to this roster from year one to year two, you can't help but just get excited from year two to year three. Not that we want to rush through year two because I think it's going to be a lot of fun. But the point is, this roster's turning over. The mentality of this team is changing, and we saw it pretty much in every facet of the game. Let's talk about a couple more things that we learned. We learned that the secondary was aggressive and it was physical. Two guys that come to mind off the top of my head: Reggie Pearson gets the penalty. And yeah, I love the penalty. I loved it because it's a mentality. Okay, so you can say, oh, it's a boneheaded, dumb play. No, it's not. It sets the tone against an inferior opponent. It tells them, we know you're inferior, and we know there's nothing you can do about it. And, I mean, Reggie Pearson's out of bounds. Quarterback's running right at him. Reggie Pearson's not moving. Just kind of dropped the shoulder a little bit, and the quarterback went down hard. 15 yards. But what happened the very next play? Reggie Pearson, tackle for loss. And then you look at Ginger Williams lowering the boom on the swing pass. And it was jawing. It was these guys, you know, they weren't, if you look across the board, not just in the defensive secondary, across the board, there was no finesse in these players. They were the bullies. Now, Arkansas State didn't have the guys that could really be there and, you know, bully them back. But they, Oklahoma did what they, I mean, you can only play the guys that are in front of you, right? No one on this team set the schedule. And if you remember right, the schedule kind of got out of whack because the move to the SEC. But the reality is, I want to see what happens against SMU is going to be a step up in athleticism. I don't know if they're going to be a step up in attitude. Tulsa is going to be a step up in athleticism from Arkansas State, probably not on the same level as SMU. So we're really not going to know until conference play rolls around. But the reality is, at this point, these guys are aggressive, they're physical, and you got to love that because if you're like me, you got tired of seeing the finesse. This is really, really good stuff. Two more things real quick. Number one, the speed of play. It was hot on Saturday, and what Jeff Lebby, you know, he said multiple times last year, I want to go faster. I want to go faster on offense, but they just didn't. They couldn't. Too much transition. Losing Caleb Williams, bringing in Dylan Gabriel, you know, all these things in transition that happened. They went fast on Saturday in brief stints, but I mean, you saw Arkansas State faking some injuries. There were some real injuries. I don't want to be that guy that screams that every injury is a fake to slow down the offense, because there were, I believe, some legitimate injuries there. But on the other side of that is there were some guys just kind of taking a dive so everyone else could catch their breath. And Oklahoma was mad about it. And I think what they did, they went even faster after that. Oh, you think this is fast? Well, watch what we can do next. It was ridiculous how fast they went, and it was ridiculous how effective they were. And when you talk about things that make a defensive coach go, oh, man, what are we going to do about this? We talked about Andrew Anthony. You got to talk about the speed of this defense, the speed of this offense, and what it's going to do to your defense, because it's going to limit you in opportunity to transition players on and off the field. You got a guy that's in the middle of your defense and he's gassed. Sorry, you got to fake an injury to get that guy off the field, because this team is going to go so, so fast, and they're going to wear you out across the board. I love the speed of play. And I think that's going to be something that, again, as you move into more intense games, that you see happen with more regularity. And then here's the final thing that really became evident what we learned about this team on Saturday against Arkansas State. Oklahoma had a clear advantage at every single position. Across the board, Oklahoma was better. The better quarterback, the better running backs, the better offensive line, the better defensive line, the better defensive backs, the better receivers, the better tight ends. Across the board, Oklahoma was better at every single position. That's why the score was 73-0. I don't think we ever saw a game last year where that was truthful across the board. We saw games where it was truthful, you know, talk about 22 guys on the field. Well, 20 of the 22, probably better than their counterparts on the other sideline. I don't know that I really don't think because of the lack of depth of all the transition and all the turnover, I don't know that we saw a game last year where Oklahoma across the board had the better athletes. And that's something, again, that Butch Jones talked about after the game, the transition of this roster and how much better this team was on the field as opposed to what they saw on film in 2022. So if you're looking for reasons to be enthusiastic and excited about Oklahoma football in 2023, there are a bangload of them out there, following last Saturday. Now, if you're looking for reasons to like be frustrated and concerned and have your gripes, you can cherry pick. You can cherry pick some things. But, I mean, come on. 73-0, and you know, you get the shutout. It's got to look pretty good. All right, so let's talk real fast. Big 12, we'll close out this podcast. I'm trying to do more short and to the point podcasts this season. Help my time, help your time, because I love doing it. It's a passion of mine. I love getting stuff out there to you guys, and I love the interaction and so forth. But sometimes you got to go shorter, right? UCF, impressive on this opening weekend. They played Thursday night. Oklahoma, obviously, we broke down what they did. Kansas State also pitching a shutout. Southeast Missouri State. Cincinnati. Again, Eastern Kentucky. How good are these teams really? But Cincinnati posting 66 points. That was impressive. Then you get into the games where like, you know, you won, but... And you look at Texas right there, 37-10 over Rice at home. People aren't happy already with Quinn Ewers after just one game. Again, I think that's, you know, separating fan bases. Oklahoma, too, has a five-star recruit at quarterback waiting in the wings. There's always been guys who were anti-Dylan Gabriel just because he wasn't Caleb Williams. But the noise is coming out of Austin. I'm really curious. There's no way. There's no way Sark is going to go to the Manning kid this soon into his career. I'm just wondering what the noise level is going to be like. Texas with the 21-point third quarter to really distance himself from Rice by the final score of 37-10. Oklahoma State, there's problems. There are so many problems with Oklahoma State. We saw it. It's there. The same thing that seemed always to be there. They don't know who their quarterback is following Spencer Sanders' departure. And then the offensive line was just atrocious. Houston, a three-point win over UTSA. That's actually not a bad win for Houston. When you think about what the expectation was for the Cougars, yeah, it's a three-point win over UTSA. But the reality is it's a win. And Dana Holgorsen is going to need to get a lot of those this season. Now, let's talk about the guys who made the Big 12 look bad. TCU, yeah, you think you're missing Garrett Riley? Maybe not, because Garrett Riley didn't coach defense. 45 points to the Colorado Buffaloes on Saturday on your own field in Fort Worth, Texas. Colorado 45-42 over TCU. The Frogs are going to have to win by outscoring teams this year. Hey, and let me throw something out. Let's just go backwards for just a second. Iowa State with a 30-9 win over Northern Iowa. That was impressive. When you think about everything that happened to this team as the season's getting ready to start with that gambling scandal, you didn't know. You lost a running back, you lost a quarterback. You, I mean, you just didn't know what was up. But to put the team together that they have, that they defensively, Northern Iowa didn't score a touchdown until the fourth quarter. So they were down, 30-3 at the end of the third quarter. So good for you, Matt Campbell, even though you kind of get on my nerves. Baylor looked really bad. Baylor was like a 21.5-point favorite, losing to Texas State. Is Dave Aranda, is that luster, is that shine rubbing off? Because he came in and did a really good job with Matt Rule's guys, but it's kind of been downhill from there. Tell me what's happening. You know, what's the pulse of Waco, Texas right now after you are a 21.5-point favorite and you lose at home 42-31 to Texas State, and then Texas Tech going down and losing in Wyoming. Again, Texas Tech talked a lot of trash. A lot of noise came out of Lubbock, Texas before this season started. You can't go on the road to Wyoming and lose in overtime. You can go on the road to Clemson and lose in overtime. You can go on the road to North Carolina and lose in overtime. I don't know why I'm only picking ACC schools. Let's go to the Pac-12. You can go on the road to UCLA. You can go on the road to USC, and you can lose in overtime. You can make a trip to Happy Valley, and you can lose in overtime. You can go to Ann Arbor and lose in overtime, and it'd be okay. You can't go to Wyoming and lose in overtime, and then everything's going to be okay. And guess what? For Texas Tech, it doesn't really get any better going into week two because you're back home, but you're playing Oregon, who, oh, by the way, you thought OU's 73 points was a lot on Saturday. Oregon put up 81. Now, it was Portland State, but they put up 81, and they're bringing that madness into Lubbock, Texas on Saturday. Not a lot of time to turn around for the Texas Tech Red Raiders. So that's going to close the door, Oklahoma and Arkansas State. That's 73-0 whipping. We're closing the door on that. We're moving forward to start talking about SMU the rest of the way through for this week. You can find us online every day, heartland-sports.com. I will have my five predictions up for the SMU game. We'll have thoughts leading up to it. We've got our Big 12 power rankings there right now and so forth. So, hey, find us there, heartland-sports.com. Find us on Twitter, @SportsHeartland. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great week. It should be a short week, right? Everyone's off for Labor Day? No, because the people who work in the restaurant industry and the gas stations and all that stuff, we don't forget you guys. Thanks for helping us out as we were enjoying our day off. Enjoy your week, everybody. Have a fun week. We'll talk later. SMU. Boomer Sooner. Bye. I'm gonna be the man who's working hard for you and spend the money.